Okay, well, folks, if we can gather up, just want to help you make sure you're in the right place. This is Discerning the Missionary Call. If you're looking for the workshop on personal peace and affluence, you're in the wrong room. So I want to, first of all, just introduce myself. I'm Jack Elwood. I'm with Avant Ministries based in Kansas City, a father of four and grandfather of four, and privileged to have served as a missionary overseas in Taiwan for 14 years with the Navigators. And also have pastored four different churches over the last 15 years, and now I'm the president and CEO of Avant Ministries based in Kansas City. So I just want you to know, despite an earned doctorate in missiology, I'm educated beyond my intelligence. So I do not pretend to have the answers to all of your questions. If you want me to personally help you discern whether or not God's calling you to be a missionary, I can't promise I can answer that for you. I can promise you will leave today confused on a much higher and much more significant level. So if you don't really want to be messed up, then you really don't want to be here today. But I want to give you some ideas that will help bring clarity and understanding to this complex understanding of what it means to be called of God to serve as a missionary. So as we begin today, let me just by word of testimony, encourage you and thank you for your bravery and your courage to come to a seminar like this. Because obviously, 40 years ago, when I was a student attending Urbana in 1973, I was petrified of the idea that God might want to call me. In fact, I grew up with this incredible fear that if I got serious with God, he would make me be a missionary to Africa. Anybody identify with that fear? Okay, maybe it was just my generation. I just knew that's what was going to happen. So when I got serious with God as a college student, he didn't make me a missionary to Africa. He made me a missionary to Asia. So I was very confused. But I grew up in the church all of my life, and I'll never forget coming to Urbana being so overwhelmed. I knew nothing. I knew nothing about my world. I knew nothing about the world Christian movement. I knew nothing about how God wanted to use me to accomplish his purposes globally. And so for me, that began a 40-year encounter of learning and growing. And where I am today as a result of the same type of encounter that I trust God is going to provide for you over the next few days. Now, having pastored a number of churches, I always made an agreement with my church, and that is if they wouldn't sleep in my church, I wouldn't preach in their bedroom. So hopefully this afternoon, I know it'll get a little hard, gets a little warm, get a little sleepy, just stay with me, okay? We're going to have about 30 minutes of presentation, then I want to provide 30 minutes of our time for question and answer, because so much of this is very personal, and every person's experience and background and education is different, and so we want to be able to provide some counsel that will enable you to fully grasp at least a beginning understanding of what it means to understand the missionary call. Because many of us are simply confused about the whole idea. And that's why today I've intentionally not tried to impress you with a PowerPoint presentation. I'm not going to try and entertain you with some creative and funny videos, though I really like them. I really think you need to hear the incarnation, the personal examples of understanding what it means to wrestle with the call of God upon your life. Well, let me begin simply by identifying a couple of things that I think are significantly misunderstood when we talk about the idea of a missionary call. Because there's a lot of anecdotal stories, there's a lot of history, there's a lot of biblical passages often taken out of context that create a false perspective for people trying to make this very important decision. The missionary call, I believe, is often misunderstood because of an emphasis on feeling called rather than hearing a call. A call is audible. It's not sensory in terms of a feeling. And how many times have we said something to the effect of, I just don't feel called? When really what we need to be able to say, have I heard a call? Do you remember when you were a child out playing in the backyard, as I would often with my friends, and I would hear my name called by my mother? And when she used my middle name, then I knew she was serious, right? Now, usually I would respond with that call to dinner, and I would come home upon hearing a call. But On one occasion, I felt more like playing baseball than I did answering my mother's call. And so when I got home, my mother asked me that question, "Did you not hear me when I called you?" And my very spiritual response at the time was, "Mom, I just didn't feel called." Think that went over very well? I don't think so. Because what she wanted to know is, did you hear me when I called you? Rather than, did you feel something about the call? And so sometimes when we talk of calling, the perception is, I have to feel something rather than hear something. And the call of God is something to be heard, not just something to be felt. Secondly, the missionary call is singular, is not singular, it's multifaceted. So it is not simply a go, no-go type of decision. If you decide to be engaged with God and His global work, you have many questions to answer. Where will I go? How long will I stay? Who will I serve with? In what capacity? Who will be my teammates? All of those types of things are a complicated set of questions that come under the guidance of calling, and it's not simply, does God want me to be a missionary? Because there are many facets to this wisdom principle that I believe the scriptures indicate that will liberate us and free us to explore and discover how God has made us and how we can approach our co-laboring with Him. Thirdly, I think our call is often misunderstood when we misunderstand the Acts 16 Macedonian vision experience. If you remember the Apostle Paul in Acts chapter 16, he is engaged as a missionary already, so it's not a call for him to become a missionary because he's already been engaged in the first missionary journey. He is now seeking direction, and he is not asking God for direction, but God reveals to him in this vision of a man from Macedonia saying, "Come over and help us." The text goes on to say, Luke, who's writing in Acts, says, "We concluded God was calling us to go to them." Interesting. How did Paul know this was a Macedonian? Anybody want to guess where his co-laborer, Dr. Luke, was from? Macedonia. Do you think that was by accident? God providentially prepared him and led him and guided him. And the birth of the church in Philippi, which was the great movement of the church in Europe, was because of God's providential and supernatural leading. But it was not a missionary call the way you and I would define it, because the apostle was already engaged. The church had already sent Paul and Barnabas into mission. And so if you're looking for an Acts 16 experience, if you're waiting for a Macedonian vision, you're misunderstanding the nature of a missionary call. The other component in that story is to remember how unique and specially prepared the Apostle Paul was for his work. He was trilingual, tricultural, trained in the Old Testament. He was the best of the best. When the church in Antioch sends Paul and Barnabas, these were not simply people who had nothing else to do in life. This was the leadership. It was the best team that church could put forward. Can you imagine a large mega church today deploying their senior pastor and their executive pastor to become missionaries of the church? Have you ever heard of that type of an analogy? It happened in the book of Acts. That was the birth of the church in mission as they sent their leadership to accomplish this mission. So the apostle was quite unique and well prepared. And just as a kind of sidebar note, remember the process of preparation. It is so critical. When I was ministering with the Navigators, with college students, we used to have a phrase that went something like this: just survive till you're 35. In other words, it's quite easy to motivate college students. It's very easy to get people excited at the beginning of the journey. It's in the middle of the journey. It's at the end of the race that is significant. If you can cultivate your spiritual life and disciplines in ministry so that age 35 you are still white hot for Jesus, then you got the real deal. And so it's important to understand that God often prepares us for a very significant period of time for a very short window of ministry. Now, we train people for 3 years in seminary for 30 years of ministry. Jesus was prepared for 30 years in preparation for 3 years of ministry. Who do you think has the right model? In other words, we need to take the long view involved, that God is involved in preparing us and developing us and maximizing our gifts and our character and our potential for the kingdom, but often we'll use it in a very unique period of time. If you've read any of the material from Bobby Clinton, his Making of the Leader book is one of the best, that gives you this picture of a timeline that God prepares us over a quite significant amount of time for this type of convergence, where our gifts and our experience and our education comes together in a powerful moment of impact. And I can tell you quite personally, after 40 years of ministry, I believe I'm right at that point. I'm just beginning to understand what impact in ministry is all about. So let me encourage you, as you begin the race, don't become discouraged when it doesn't happen tomorrow, because it's in the completion of the journey that God receives the most glory. Secondly, I believe that often this call is over-spiritualized. In other words, we tend to use language, we tend to describe experiences without an understanding of the will of God in a more generic and holistic sense. If you want a book to really mess you up, let me encourage you to read Bruce Waltke's Finding the Will of God, a Pagan Heresy. Did you hear that? Finding the Will of God, a Pagan Heresy. Dr. Waltke suggests that much of what we look for in the will of God is actually much closer to paganism and mysticism than it is biblical orthodoxy. When we look for the magic, when we look for the special signs and wonders, when we don't use godly wisdom to make good decisions, we are much closer to animism than we are biblical theology. Just let that kind of sink in for just a minute. And think about how we make decisions. For example, if you want to know what time it is it more spiritual to look at your watch or ask God to reveal it to you in the sky? In other words, is it unspiritual to use what God has given you to make good decisions? He's given you a mind. He's given you a brain to use. He's given you knowledge and experience and wisdom and counsel and all of the things that God has provided for you to make those good decisions. His will has been revealed. He is not hiding it from us, but he wants us to learn. Just like the young man who goes to the sage and says, "What is the secret to discerning a missionary call?" The man says two words: good decisions. The young man thinks, "Whoa, that's deep. Wow, good decisions." Thinks about it and then says, "Yeah, but how does one learn to make good decisions?" He says two words: bad decisions. Anybody identify with that process? Have you not learned the most in the bad decisions you have made on how to make good decisions in the future? You see, God gives us wisdom to learn from and to use, obviously couched in biblical revelation, surrounded by the leadership and guidance of the Holy Spirit and through the work and ministry of the local church. God intends to deploy laborers into his harvest. But it's not magic, and it doesn't have to be mystical in the way that we sometimes look for it. It is very practical and very real. It is supernatural, but it is also grounded in revelation. When you think of this, another aspect of the call that often confuses people is they ask the question, "Do I need a call in order to go?" And there's a whole range of responses from those who believe simply it's a matter of obedience. Jesus said, "Go and make disciples." You should go and make disciples. To others who believe you shouldn't go at all unless you have a supernatural, special revelation from God about your specific role in the kingdom. Somewhere in the middle is a healthy balance of understanding. And having the experience I do, have not only having served overseas in a vocational role, but also now leading a mission agency with about 300 missionaries, I can tell you I'm not convinced you have to have a call before you go. But I am convinced you will never stay without a call. It will be too hard. It will be too difficult. And this is one of the challenges that I think is most significant in your generation. We have a hero of our mission, Frank Drown, who was the man who buried the five martyrs in Ecuador in 1956. He went from the farm in the Midwest to the jungles of Ecuador and lived there for 45 years. Life was hard on the farm. Life is hard in the jungle. Life is hard. But the challenge is when you're raised in the suburbs and you've never even had a hard or difficult secular job, or you've never had to endure hardship as the scriptures talk about, how does one go into some of the hardest places in the world and survive? I believe it's with a clear understanding of the call of God upon your life and the perseverance and the endurance that comes through mature character. And that only comes from experience. That is not a slight on anyone's background or experience, just a simple understanding. If you've never been tested, you never really know. And so part of the missionary call is developing a background, an experience, a testing, if you will, to see if God has prepared you. If you have no linguistic ability, if you have no cultural sensitivity, if you have nothing that you bring to the table that enables the gospel to go through you and communicate it in another environment, maybe that's not the best place for you. But you might only know that by trying. And some of the experiences that God gives you is to give you a window into the possibility that God might be using you for global purposes. Well, let me suggest a couple of things that are real practical in terms of how can I begin to understand and take some very specific steps to grow in my understanding and clarity of the missionary call. Because today my objective is to hopefully help you understand. It is not convince you to believe. Which is just, again, as a sidebar, one of the components that should be clear in your understanding of evangelism. That when you take Christ to the nations, when you share the gospel with those you know, your objective is not to convince them. All you have to do is help them understand. It's the Holy Spirit's job to bring about conviction of sin and of righteousness and of judgment. Our job is to make it clear. And so when we're engaging in that process, I trust that the great freedom that comes to the believer of having that sense of opportunity enables us to remain just laser focused on what we're called to do. I'll never forget sharing with a college student years ago about the gospel and his need for Christ. And as we would go through some inductive Bible study, he would say, "But I don't believe that." And I said, "I know that. That's okay. Let's keep going. But do you understand? Yes, do you understand your need for Jesus? Yes, do you understand the situation with your sin and the resulting consequence? Yes, I don't believe it. That's okay. It's not my job. My job is to help you understand." And he wrestled and wrestled. I didn't have to twist his arm. And eventually, after 7 or 8 weeks, he began to realize, not only does he understand, he's starting to believe this. That's the Spirit of God at work. And so in the same way, when we talk about the missionary call, it should not be this incredible sense of fear that overcomes us. When I ran into Dr. Ralph Winter years ago, a man that I often say ruined my life, Ralph used to say, "God cannot lead you on the basis of the facts you do not have. God cannot lead you on the basis of the facts you do not have." And so one of the things you can begin to do is to gain information and knowledge about what God is doing in the world. So here's a couple of things I want to suggest for you to understand. First, can you articulate God's plan for the nations? You're going to hear about it today. You're going to hear about it tomorrow. You heard about it yesterday. We've sung songs about it. Can you articulate from the scriptures, from Genesis to Revelation, what God is up to and what he wants, what's on his heart? Until you understand that, you're asking the wrong questions about whether I should be a missionary. The first is to understand the missionary heart of God. And so one of the very practical things you can do is whether it's a reading program, taking a perspectives class, being mentored by a missionary, you've got to get a handle on the scriptures so that you understand from Genesis to Revelation what God is going to do. Because if you read to the end of the book, you'll know. The promise is certain. Revelation 7:9, "Indeed, men and women from every tribe and tongue and people and nation will be gathered at the throne. It's not in doubt. It is going to happen. The only question is, will you be a part of it? In other words, do you begin to realize what God is doing and that He invites you to join Him in seeing this accomplished? If you don't participate, He will use others. But He invites us as His followers, not simply to be profoundly afraid of doing something you don't want to do, which was honestly my perspective, to doing something you cannot believe God would invite you and allow you the privilege of co-laboring with Him. It is because of who He is that we should understand His call. Think about all of the examples in Scripture of people who understood their call in the light of God revealing Himself. Abraham, Moses, Isaiah, the disciples, the Apostle Paul. Where did they get their vision? As God revealed who He was. And they began to realize God was inviting them to join Him in His work. That is always the beginning point of discernment. Consider your understanding of what God is doing in the world. Secondly, understand the current realities. Do you surf the net? Do you keep abreast of what's taking place in the world? Have you read and prayed through Operation World? Do you know the spiritual needs of the world today? How can God lead you on the basis of the facts you do not know? Become more informed about what the opportunities are today. Do you realize today we have more opportunities than we have ever had before? Yes, there are more challenges. Yes, there are more costs. Yes, there are more sacrifices. But it's much like Chesty Puller, the Marine Corps general in the Korean War. At one point, an aide comes to him at a moment when the Chinese army had surrounded the South Korean and the U.S. forces. And the aide said, "General, we're surrounded on every side. Should we surrender?" You know what he said? Well, I can't tell you the language that he used to describe it, but let me just paraphrase. He said, "Surrender?" He says, "I can shoot now in any direction and not miss. Why would I surrender?" Do you feel at times when you hear the news, when you see the setbacks, when you understand the challenges before, are you overwhelmed and think, how will we ever make a difference? See, biblical faith says we can shoot in any direction and not miss. There are so many opportunities. There are so many needs. There are so many ways for people to use their gifts and their talents and their abilities to accomplish the work of the kingdom today, like never before. It's an incredible time to be alive. But we have to be aware. Thirdly, understand what your gifts, your spiritual gifts, your own personal skills, your education, through godly counsel of people who know you well, what do you bring to the table that you could use? As you've heard the analogy, God often wants our availability as well as our ability. But He does want our abilities, and He wants to use them. And so if your picture of a missionary is a guy in a pith helmet who is going to live in the jungle, you don't understand missions in the 21st century. For most people, we're going to send you to urban areas where there are challenging environments that have nothing to do with living in the bush. It's much more like the urban environments you're probably used to than you're even aware of. That is the reality of much of what is taking place in the 21st century. But you must be aware of it to know how your skills and abilities can be used. And then fourthly, ask yourself a disturbing question. Am I really willing to serve in whatever capacity God would so choose? You know, most of us say, "God, if you'll just show me what you want me to do, then I'll pray about it. I'll think about it." But the Scriptures indicate the reverse is the way that Jesus operates. First you decide if you will do what He calls you to do, then He will reveal it to you. And so the hard part, quite honestly, is getting before God and coming to that point where you say, "God, I will do whatever. I will go wherever, for however long you want, I'm yours." That is the bigger question. And then allow God to lead you and guide you according to His good plan. Well, there's a couple of resources I want to encourage you to do some further reading and study in this area. One is the book, The Missionary Call, by David Sills. He's one of the seminar workshop leaders here at Urbana. One of the best books I've found that gives a much more comprehensive coverage of this topic. It's very hard to do this in 30 minutes. It's kind of like preaching on God, man, and the universe, in 30 minutes or less. But it's one of the books that I think is very, very helpful. There's an article that I wrote years ago called The Missionary Call. It's on our website at avantministries.org, and you can go there. It's on the front page and download it. It's a simple set of questions that I put together to help people work through those complex areas that relate to their understanding of calling and the missionary. Yes? Yeah, Avant, A-V-A-N-T, avantministries.org. Another is a book by Marv Newell called Commissioned, published by Church Smart Resources. Again, a good comprehension of the basic biblical theology of mission, as well as some practical tools on making those decisions about how I might use my gifts and abilities for the kingdom. Now, again, I come back to the issue of dealing with fear. Because for many of us, this is a big issue. As I mentioned to you personally, I grew up petrified that God would actually want me to be a missionary. In fact, when I went to the U.S. Center in the late 70s, Ralph Winter was beginning that work, we prayed for a Christian musician to write songs of missions. And Scott Wesley Brown was the answer to those prayers. And if you want to find a really funny and powerful YouTube video, go and look for Scott Wesley Brown, "Please Don't Send Me to Africa." And that was my prayer. God, I'll do anything, go anywhere, but please don't send me to Africa. Now, it reminds me of a missionary colleague of mine who grew up as an MK in India. And when he got serious with God, he said, "God, I'll go anywhere, but back to India." Want to guess where he's serving today? He's in India. But now he prays, "God, I'll go anywhere but Hawaii." But it's hard to fool an omniscient God. But one of the things that you can begin to do is to understand Jesus' instruction. You remember in Matthew 9, verses 36 through 38, Jesus said, "The harvest is white, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray the Lord of the harvest to send laborers into his harvest." And this is one of the most dangerous passages in all of the Bible to pray. If you want to be safe, do not pray that verse, okay? Now, for years, I have to admit, I misprayed that verse. I believed it. I knew it was true. But this was my thinking. Jesus said, "The harvest is great and the laborers are few." So doesn't it seem to make sense that we need more laborers? Seems rational. But look at the text. That's not what Jesus said. Jesus did not ask for more. He prayed for the laborers to be in the harvest. In other words, picture this wheat field, white to harvest, but all the laborers are standing around the edges watching the harvest rather than being in the harvest. And Jesus is saying, "I've got the laborers. I've got all of the resources I need to accomplish the mission, but they're not in the harvest." So as they pray for laborers to be in the harvest, anyone ever read beyond Matthew 9 to Matthew 10? Do you know what Jesus does in that process? Some of you read Luke this morning. What follows that in Luke's passage? Go. So as they pray, and I can kind of see, at least in my mind, picturing the disciples in a circle praying, "Jesus, please send more laborers into the harvest. In Jesus' name, amen." And they look up, and Jesus says, "Great. Peter and Andrew, you go here. James and John, you go here." And I can see Peter going, no. "Jesus, you said pray. You did not say go. I'm very at peace about praying. I'm not so excited about going." But you see, in Jesus' mind, prayer is preparation for that journey. as you begin to pray, guess what? You share his heart. You begin to understand what he is up to, and you want to be a part. And Jesus calls you. See, it's what we often call the cardinal rule of prayer. You cannot ask God for that which he's already provided. Okay, so if I'm walking down the street and I've got a sandwich in my hand and I encounter a homeless person who needs a meal, is it a legitimate biblical prayer to say, God, would you please send someone to help this guy? No. You are the answer to that prayer. You cannot ask God to do something that you should be doing. You are the answer to that prayer. And in the same way, guess what happens when you pray for laborers for the harvest? It doesn't mean everyone should be a missionary. It simply means be careful, because it's very dangerous to ask God to send others and not for you to make yourself available to be the answer to that prayer. So when you think about this decision, let me give you a quote that has helped me immensely over the years in making a difficult choice about vocation and career and direction. It's a quote from Dawson Trotman, the founder of the Navigators. And he said, "Don't do what others can and will do when there's so much to be done that others can't and won't do." Don't do what others can and will do when there's so much to be done that others can't and won't do. Continually ask yourselves that question. Can anybody else do this? Is anybody else willing to do it? What is it that no one else can do or is willing to do? Can I volunteer for the hard jobs? God, I'm willing to do. I want that type of clarity in my life. And it's not to earn brownie points. It's not to impress God with your commitment or your sacrifice. It's simply an understanding in light of who he is, his greatness, that causes our heart to say, I want to be involved in this. This is what changed me from the aspect of fear to an understanding of embracing that God, you would let me be a part of this? Don't you know about all my baggage? Don't you know about all my issues? Don't you know about my... You would still, knowing all that, you would still be willing to use me. The schmuck that I... That's Hebrew for really bad guy. You would still use me? I cannot tell you the thrill after 10 long years of studying Mandarin Chinese, of being engaged with a number of colleagues and co-laborers as I was teaching and working with some leaders in Taiwan who are traveling into house churches into China. And after 30 hours of preparation for 1 hour of class, since I was probably still speaking at a high school level, they understood me. And they took what I taught them, and they helped hundreds and thousands of people in China. And God let me be a part of that. I just want you to know, I'm not that good. I'm not that educated. But to see God use you to take his word and to take his good news to others, and to embrace in a different culture and a different language, and to know the thrill of what that means. I covet that for you. So that it's not a fear, it's like, wow, God would let me, he would invite me, the God of the universe would actually not only allow me to embrace the gospel, but become a conduit of the gospel to others, that I could become a steward of the manifold grace of God. That should amaze you, that God invites you into that process. I learned this a few years ago when I was pastoring in Northern Virginia, right outside of D.C., and I got a very interesting phone call one day. It said, the White House. Of course, I'm as shocked as you are right now. And I was saying, okay, who is this? Somebody's yanking my chain here. Like, no, this isn't. Yes, sir, it's the White House. And the president would like to invite you to the special meeting we're having. And it'll be coming up next month, and he'd like to know if you will be willing to attend. Really? This was President Bush starting of his faith-based initiative, and we had just held a conference in D.C. for a gathering of men, and a couple of White House staffers were there, and somehow they thought my friend and I were influential evangelical leaders. They didn't know much. And so we got invited to this meeting. And here in the White House, we're meeting with the cabinet and the president, and there's Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and Jim Dobson and me. It was about 25 of us. And I'm just blown away, like, what? What? And to sit with the president and talk about the spiritual needs of the country and be overwhelmed with the sense of power and influence that all comes from living in Washington, it's a very heady thing. But the next year when they called me, despite of having a busy schedule and having a lot of activities as a pastor and responsibilities, do you think when the president called me, I made time in my schedule to do that again? You're darn right I did. What an incredible privilege and honor. Now, afterwards, it kind of got boring after the third or fourth year. But the reality is, it was the president of the United States calling me. And that doesn't even begin to compare. It is infinitesimally small to the God of the universe who calls me by name and invites me to join him in what he is doing. Who in their right mind would not want to respond to that? In whatever capacity God chooses to lead and guide you, who would not want to participate in what God was doing in his world? Well, that's the context, I think, when we begin to realize this is not something to fear, but an incredible privilege to be embraced. I changed from saying, God, I'll do anything but that, which, just by way of warning, never tell God what you won't do, okay? I can almost guarantee you that's where he's going to take you. So the Hawaii, remember the Hawaii. God, I'll go anywhere but Hawaii. But understand that that transitions you to a point where you say, God, could I be a part of that? Would you let me be a part of that? Could I give my life in service this way? What an incredible privilege. You see how different those two paradigms are of moving from fear to faith, of understanding the privilege versus the pressure? Those are the things that can begin to help us set the right tone for discerning a fully biblical missionary call. Well, I want to leave time for some questions. So I'm going to ask the ladies if you'll help with the microphone, and we want to take time just to see if I can respond. Now, again, I can't guarantee I've got an answer to every question. In fact, your questions will probably confuse me. But hopefully you can begin to get some linkage together with what we've said, with what you're wrestling with in terms of questions. So let's just, we'll take a show of hands, someone who's got a question to begin with here, and then we'll go from there.
Hi, thank you so much. So when you mentioned about praying for God to send out laborers and how that can be a dangerous thing to do, I definitely identify with that because I started praying that Bible translations would be available to unreached peoples, and then I started feeling like, maybe that's for me. But knowing myself, I know that I get, so-called great ideas all the time and, can be very spontaneous and then fickle and change my mind. So I'm just wondering, how do you trust that something is really something God's leading you to do rather than just one of those random ideas that you get?
Great question. Are there any other great questions? No, just kidding. I think the danger where that comes into play is when you try and make those decisions in isolation. If you're sitting in your room by yourself trying to decide this, I can almost guarantee you're not going to be objective. You need some other people to speak into that situation, people who know you well, people who can help you evaluate, whether it's a pastor, elder, counselor, friend, someone who's got some life maturity that begins to see you in action. Now, part of the challenge, I think, especially in young adulthood, is you don't have a lot of experience. So you need to build some experience to see, could I do this? Do I have an interest in this? How many of you ever have encountered a person who believes they have the gift of music who can't carry a tune? And you kind of go, really? You think you have the gift? I don't think so, That's not your job to tell them that. But the reality is sometimes we can think we have a gift or an ability, and others might kind of go, maybe not, Maybe you should consider doing this. So I think one of the ways that we can protect ourselves from subjectivity is to have others who know us and who speak into our life and enable us to say, boy, I really see that in you. Now, one of the dangers we have of simply going to the mission field rather than being sent to the mission field is the lack of a healthy church that's behind us, that has seen us and known us and loves us and endorses us. That's the model that you see in Antioch, the church being behind those who are being deployed. So I think if we could have a better sense of community with experienced, mature people behind us, it would really help in that decision.
I just had a question about exactly what's the difference between, I really like your point about feeling versus hearing the call.
Mm-hmm.
How would you know if you're supposed to, I know we're all supposed to make disciples, but are we supposed to make disciples here or there? I know it's all good, but there's still a difference, you know? So I guess that's kind of my question.
Yeah. You'll hear, for example, the expression, everybody is a missionary. Now, the problem with that thinking is everybody's a missionary, nobody's a missionary. In other words, words have to have meaning. So would you say everyone is a pastor? No. Then why is everyone a missionary? What we mean is everyone is to be engaged in the mission of God. It's like telling every soldier in the army you have to be an infantryman. Do you know that there are 10 support people for every soldier who fires a gun? I mean, if every soldier had to be an infantryman, you'd say, well, then who supports them? What's the administration? What's the logistics? All the planning, all the leadership that goes behind those type of individuals. So when you look at it from a Christian perspective, everyone's to be in the army, but not everyone's an infantry soldier. So in the same way, we're all to be engaged in God's mission to the world, but it doesn't mean we should all be missionaries. So again, that's why the complicated set of questions to discern, what are my gifts? What are my abilities? What are the opportunities? Do I understand what God is doing in the world? And begin to explore some of those as a finding out of God's revelation about your personal experience. So, again, it's not a simple answer, I guess, is probably the best response. It's not just, should I be or should I not be a missionary? If I say yes, I still have many questions to answer. And some of us need to realize, again, a new paradigm, a new picture of missions in the 21st century. It's different than it was 200 years ago, okay? The message is the same, but the environments are vastly different. And that's really significant for us in thinking about those decisions. For example, as a mission agency, Avant, we focus primarily on church planting among unreached people groups. And a number of people say, well, oh, church planting. Oh, I'm not a pastor. It's like, that's not what I said. So we're engaged in starting churches. We make friends. We share Jesus. We disciple people. We form them in community, and we start churches. Oh, you see, I could be a part of that. But if you ask me, are you a pastor of a church? No. We're helping birth those new communities. So if with the wrong picture in mind or wrong definition, you would just put yourself out of that opportunity and say, well, that's not for me, rather than saying, no, you have to think more clearly and understand what part of the team could you be a part of. Next question.
Hi. So you mentioned that we should hear being called instead of feel being called. So can you give us some specific examples in which we can hear being called? Because how can we prevent ourselves to have some kind of self-fulfilling prophecy when we keep feeling that we are being called and we see everything? Like if you see a verse right on the wall and say, oh, that's for me to go. Like how do you tell?
Yeah. And we do have to be careful because, again, God does the supernatural, right? We don't explain him fully. You know, it's Will Rogers who used to say, it's not the parts of the Bible that I don't understand that bother me. It's the part that I do understand. And so when we think about, you know, understanding these things, if we could understand this thing perfectly, we should be more concerned because then God isn't bigger than our ability to comprehend. But I do think we have to use wisdom. And again, I go back to the scriptures to say this is the beginning point of revelation. Do we understand what God has said so that we are clear in our minds what he is up to? Redeeming a people from all peoples, establishing the worship of the one true God among every tribe, tongue, and nation. Can we articulate, can we see the thread throughout Scripture? That's the beginning point of hearing, when God has spoken to us through his word. Now, there's also unique experiences in life that we also have to be careful not to over-evaluate. Let me tell you one. When I was leaving a church in Los Angeles, I was trying to make a decision about the will of God, and I was working on a number of different options, and I happened to be driving down the hill from my home to the shopping center, and it was the time when this was the early mid-90s, and two movies came out at that time, and on this movie billboard were the titles of the two movies. It said, Out of L.A., Jack. Like, I almost had a car accident right there at the intersection. As I looked up and I saw this sign, I went, whoa. Like, okay, God, is that, you know, is that from you? And I'm going to interpret this correctly. And again, we can look for things like that and you know, overread into those circumstances. But I do think it begins first with an understanding of who God is and then having godly counsel around us and then asking God to confirm those steps. The real challenge we often have, I think, is discerning our own hearts. Do I really want to? Would I want to be a part of this if God is leading me to give my life in service? If we can get to that point, then I think we can begin to confirm this sense of call upon our life. But if we do it in, again, isolation by ourselves in a quiet room without any other input into our life, I think we're in danger of personal subjectivity. So it shouldn't, it's a personal issue, but it's not a private issue. It should not be us alone making those decisions. Okay.
Okay, I feel called to go into overseas missions. Feel called, I'm not sure. It's heard.
That's okay, I say it all the time too.
Okay. But what should I do if my boyfriend to be fiance does not feel called?
Boy, that's a great question. Do you really want the answer? It's complicated. I think it's fair to say, and this could be true of a married couple. The last session, the couple was a husband and wife. Do they see it? Do they feel it the exact same way? My response was no. I don't think a husband should expect his wife to feel the exact same way he does. Hopefully close, similar, but different. I think this is an important enough component that I would say if you're considering marriage as a serious issue, that ought to be on the table. It shouldn't be a disqualifier, but it should say if we are so spiritually different that that is not even an option, there's a bigger issue between us that needs to be resolved before that decision could be made. So I think it would be very important to have a serious conversation about that. But again, it doesn't mean every person is meant to be a missionary. You're not out of the will of God because you choose not to be a missionary. You need to have that sense of freedom and peace to understand. You're still called to be engaged in the mission of God, but it doesn't mean that everyone should be a missionary. But if we're willing to look at that as a possibility, it opens up whole new avenues for us to consider.
Hi, I have two questions, and you can choose one or the other.
I'll choose the easier one.
Okay. The first one is, I and a lot of people, a lot of other students that I talk to, struggle with baggage related to the idea of missionary call in the sense that we think it is what super spiritual people do. And so there's this temptation to pursue missionary work because of the accolades, in a sense, or the spirituality, or the maybe God will approve me now. And so instead of trusting God, it almost becomes a works-based step. And then and that affects other people around us that are giving advice, too. They may be more inclined to tell us, yeah, go, because everyone should go. It's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
So how to balance that maybe is my first question. And then the second question is, if we have a burden for a people group that we have no idea how to reach, should we wait until we have a strategy, a practical strategy, or not?
Okay, great questions. I think there is a tension of the spirituality. I mean, I'll be honest, I love missionaries. I admire people who sacrifice for the kingdom. And there's just no way getting around it. An engagement in global missions, serving cross-culturally, is a sacrifice. Now, people would ask me all the time, oh, it must be an incredible sacrifice to live in Taiwan. I go, no, I love it. It's great. I love the food. I love the people. The only sacrifice I had was leaving my family to do it. Okay? But But the reality is, in many places of the world, it really is a sacrifice. And so we should honor. The scriptures tell us to honor one another. And there is an honor that comes from sacrifice, but also a danger that comes from thinking that makes us better or makes us more righteous. And it's very dangerous because people love on you as a missionary and they hold you up and they think you're a super spiritual person. And it's really hard just to be normal at times because you know you're not that good. Okay? So there is a proper element of honoring those and respecting those who will sacrifice for the kingdom without getting it distorted. What was the second question? Tell me again. Do not worry about that. That's my job. Okay. Strategy needs to be done by people who know what they're doing. When you're in the beginning of the journey, you need to surround yourself with wise and experienced people. It's not your job to develop that strategy. In fact, one of the things we do with our missionary teams is we develop a creativity that enables them to look for a strategy. They don't go into an environment, a people group, necessarily having a defined strategy. They discover it once they're there. So there's a discovery process. There's a creativity involved, a seeing where God is at work. That's important. Doesn't mean you don't plan ahead. Doesn't mean you don't think through the process. But the reality is many times we discover where God is at work in unique ways. For example, one of our teams in Poland bumped into a guy having a conversation. He said, "I'm on my way to a choir practice." And you go, "A choir practice?" He says, "What are you singing?" So we sing black gospel music in English in Poland. Can I come and see this? And so they came and here's secular Poles, none of them believers, singing black gospel music. And they love it. And they have no idea what they're singing. And so he says, "Can I explain what these words are about?" And they said, "Yeah, in fact, why don't you teach us from the Bible every week about what these songs are?" And all of a sudden, our people started singing with them and started sharing the gospel. People start coming to faith. Now, who could have planned a strategy like that? They just discovered it. Another of our teams in Italy were out in the park, and they saw some guys playing baseball. And they said, "Hey, can we play baseball with you guys?" And they said, "You're Americans? Would you be the coach of our team?" So they started coaching the team and playing baseball and sharing life together and sharing Christ, and people start coming to faith, and a church is birthed as a result of these type of baseball contacts. Black gospel music, American baseball. Who would develop a strategy like that? Only God does that type of stuff. Okay.
Hi, how are you? My question is...
Okay. You're next.
My question is, like, what kinds of things or events should we interpret as confirmations from God?
What types of events or circumstances should we look to as confirmation? That is a great question. It's really hard to say. If I'm going to be honest, again, I would go back to that list, if you will. Are there other people who speak into this situation? Are the opportunities matching your gifts and abilities? Is the timing right? It shouldn't be simply looking for the tea leaves. In other words, if I read the newspaper and I see this word, do I know that's from God telling me to go? You know, I always joke with people that in the early 80s, 1979, actually, when I ran into Ralph and he was first publishing the idea of the unreached people groups, and they were talking about the Hindu world and the Muslim world and the Chinese world, and I said, "Man, I love sweet and sour pork. I think I ought to go Chinese, you know." Now, was that God? Okay, not really. But it was something that I was interested in, and God used it as a way of confirming and helping me understand. So there are life circumstances that God can use to confirm, but that should be at the tail end of the process, not at the beginning. Does that make sense? Yes.
I always thought that I have to know if I'm called to be a missionary before I choose my major in school. Hmm. And the reason I say that is because I want to be a nurse, but I was born in Mexico in Juarez, and I feel like that place is always in my mind. Hmm. And I feel like if I do nursing, I'm not sure if God then calls me, that nursing will help that place. So I don't know what to do.
Okay. Well, let me give you some just wise counsel. Become a nurse. You can go anywhere in the world. Anywhere in the world with a nursing degree, with nursing experience. There is always opportunities to minister to people in that degree. Now, I also encourage, get some Bible education. Get some things to help you prepare cross-culturally. All of those things are really important. But don't simply see it as, unless I go to Bible school or seminary, I can't be a missionary. In other words, it can be a combination of your skills and your education and your biblical training that will prepare you for effective service. When I was teaching in Taiwan, I was there as a university professor ministering to students. Students never saw me as a typical missionary. In fact, I'll never forget one of my students the very first year came up to me. She said, "Teacher, I met this American, and he drives a new car, and he lives in a big house, and he doesn't have a job. He says he's a missionary, and people send money from the United States for him to live here. Do you know what that's all about?" Oh, my. How does one begin to answer that question? But because I was relating to them as a professor, as a teacher, I had access. And every day, I had students in my office asking spiritual questions. It was the easiest time of ministry in my entire life. My job was my ministry, and it opened the floodgates of opportunity for the gospel. Okay, one more question. Where are we?
Hello. Oh, there we go. My question has to do more with sort of evangelism, but leading up to missions.
Okay.
So I heard the guy from Kenya. I forgot his name. He said something about if something's not good for local consumption, then it's not good for export. But I guess to kind of gauge someone's, like, how effective their evangelism is, like, how much do numbers count, sort of? Like, because, I mean, I'm someone who doesn't just talk about Jesus all the time, but when it really comes down to, like, few people that I really care about, I do kind of talk to them about it, and, like, I kind of witness to them. So, like, how much would you say numbers kind of matter? In the context
I'm not sure it's a numbers question. It might relate more to terms of gifting. For example, if you don't see yourself as a gifted evangelist, then probably going into a full-time evangelism role is probably not the right position. But that's not the whole definition of what it means to be a missionary. I mean, there's all sorts of roles, all sorts of possibilities. One of the things that we do on our teams is to bring people with different gifts together to complement one another so that in a team setting, people realize there's such variety in their temperaments and gifts and personalities. So for some person, we have people on our team, they're not the great linguists that we'd really like them to be, but they are people magnets. Everywhere they go, they make friends. They have more contacts for the team than the linguist who has the great language skill. Together, it's a great combination. But separately, they wouldn't have near the impact. So again, depends on in what capacity, in what role, where you're going, what you're going to do. If it's simply defined as a one-size-fits-all, it's very limiting. But it really goes back again to a healthy analysis of your gifts, your abilities, the opportunities there, in what setting you're going to be involved in, the type of organization you're going to work with. All of those things come together. Well, one of the things that you'll find really helpful is to talk with people who are living and doing this. And so I want to encourage you here as we close, if I can answer some more questions. I also have some members of my team here from Avant. Guys, if you raise your hand. These are experienced missionaries. If you'd like to ask them questions or come down to our booth in the exhibit hall, we're in the 1200 section. Sometimes just talking to someone who's been through that journey is really helpful. It's not magic. We don't have the perfect answer for you. But that is one of the things that you will find out is just getting that type of counsel from people who have been a little further down the road is very, very helpful. Well, again, I hope you understand what we were trying to do today to bring some type of understanding and clarity to this definition. There's a lot more to know. There's a lot more to study. And I pray that God will give you that sense of clarity, conviction. And if you have more questions, I'll be down front. Be glad to answer any questions. Thanks so much. Glad you're here.